KaiserNetwork.org.
Jacob Packer, thank you so much for joining us today. You write in the book about the growing economic insecurity of American families and how it's crept straight through the middle class. Describe what you found.
Well, the story I tell is really about how in almost every facet of middle class families' economic lives, their jobs, their pensions, their health care, the security of their family finances, that more and more economic risk has been shifted from the broad shoulders of government and corporations onto the fragile balance sheets of American families. You know, a generation ago, most employers provided defined benefit, guaranteed pension, that gave you a fixed benefit for the remainder of your life after you retired. And now, of course, most employers that provide a pension give a defined contribution, 401k-style investment account that doesn't offer that kind of insurance protection in old age. We've seen the same kinds of shifts with health insurance. Fewer employers are providing coverage. They're putting more costs onto workers. They're requiring, in some cases, that employers take on high-deductible, catastrophic-style plans and set up a health savings account. And we have also seen just a dramatic increase in the rates of bankruptcy and home foreclosure,
personal
bankruptcy and home foreclosure. So across the board, we've seen that Americans, despite the prosperity of our economy, are facing much more economic risk in their daily economic lives.
You tell a lot of anecdotes. You share a lot of anecdotes
yeah.
in the book. Is there one anecdote that you think is representative of what you've just described?
Yeah, I mean, I think the story that really captures the theme of the book is the story of the Dorset family. Sharon and Arnold Dorset are really kind of the quintessential middle-class family. Arnold Dorset is an air conditioner repairman. He earns $70,000 a year. Part of the reason he earns $70,000 a year, it turns out, is he's working 90-hour weeks. And the reason he's working 90-hour weeks and the reason that Sharon, who is training to be a nurse but has taken off time to stay home with the children, isn't finishing her degree, is that their son, Zachary, one of their three children, has a rare immune system disorder. And even though they have insurance, within a matter of months, they run up $30,000 in credit card bills paying for their health care. And they can't make their car payments, they can't make their mortgage payments, and eventually, in 2005, they succumb to the inevitable and they file for bankruptcy. In 2005, 2 million American households filed for bankruptcy, so they were certainly not alone. But what Arnold Dorset said after this filing, he said, I make good money and I work hard for it. When I filed for bankruptcy, I felt I had failed. He really felt that he was somehow personally responsible for this tragedy that had befallen his family. And what I'm arguing in the book is that this is really a tragedy that all of us should feel responsible for, because we need to build a stronger safety net so that families like the Dorsets don't slip through the cracks and find themselves in such tragic situations.
And then how do you respond to critics who say that if you take the long view, more Americans have own homes, they have more Americans have college degrees, more Americans have more appliances in their homes, which they've bought, sometimes on credit, no doubt, but that there is more abundance in our lives now than 20 or 30 years ago, and that that doesn't translate to economic insecurity?
Well, you know, the fact is that if you look at middle-class incomes over the last 25 years or so, they've risen relatively modestly after you adjust for inflation. It's true that we are more likely to have some of these valued goods like appliances, but what I'm really describing is the insecurity that comes from failing to have a basic safety net against severe economic risks, you know, catastrophic health costs or the risk of retiring early because of sickness in the family or sickness of yourself, or the risk of not being able to having your investments go sour near retirement so you don't have enough to retire on. And the fact is that despite the fact that we are somewhat richer as a nation than we were a generation ago, and certainly the richest among us are much richer, middle-class families are not better protected than they used to be. Indeed, the opposite is true. Even though we've seen our country become more prosperous, all of the measures that I use in the book of economic insecurity, the number of Americans with health insurance, how unstable incomes are from year to year, whether people are protected against really large drops in their income or the probability of losing a job and not being able to find a comparable one, all those kinds of risks have actually grown, even though our overall economic prosperity has grown.
One of the solutions you propose, most specifically in the paper that you wrote for the Brookings Institution, is this idea of having universal insurance. Walk us through that.
Sure.
Guard against this economic insecurity.
In universal insurance, this proposal is really, I think of it a kind of outside-the-box idea, because so often we focus on sort of narrowly tailored programs for very specific risks. So we'll have a health program, or we'll have an unemployment insurance program, or we'll have a program that protects retirement savings or retirement income adequacy. What this proposal really is about providing a broad-based kind of last resort form of insurance so that all families can be protected against really severe risks. It's a lot like stop-loss insurance that corporations buy, and that, as the name implies, corporations buy this insurance to protect themselves against, to stop really big losses. And the way it would work is essentially that if you had a very large drop in your family's income due to a certain specified set of risks like disability or ill health or unemployment, or if you face one very big expense that most families are facing today, that is catastrophic health costs, you would be able to get a modest amount of protection against those costs or those drops in income to bring you back up a little bit from the depth that you would reach if you didn't have that protection.
Well, let's go back to the Dorset family then. How would the Dorset family have used this universal insurance to stave off bankruptcy?
Well, what would have happened is that when their health care costs had exceeded in 20% of their income in the proposal, which is, you know, they had $70,000 a year income, so at $14,000, they would have suddenly started, this program would have suddenly started kicking in. And the way it works in practice is that for health expenses, what it would do is provide people with an ATM-like card that they could use to pay for additional expenses above that amount. It wouldn't cover all those expenses, but it would cover a share of them based on income. And I wouldn't go into the sort of details of the proposal, but the share that would be covered could be as generous as, say, 50% of the expenses that were not covered under their insurance proposal, so their insurance plan. So it could very well have kept them from filing bankruptcy. The estimates that I have done are more focused on the insurance effects, and what I've shown is that the probability that an individual will experience a very large drop in income in their family's income of 50% or more would be cut in half by this proposal, and it would lift roughly 3 million Americans out of poverty each year. But lifting out of poverty isn't even the right way to put it. It would prevent about 3 million Americans a year from even entering poverty in the first place. The basic idea is, let's have a safety net that makes sure that people don't fall into poverty so that they have the foundation of security that they need to be able to live their lives, to look toward the future, to invest in their future, to have confidence about their long-term economic prospects.
You estimate it would cost about $35 billion a year.
Yes.
Where does the funding come from?
Well, in the proposal, I specify a couple possible funding sources. I mean, $35 billion may sound like a huge amount of money. And there's this old joke that is told about the late legislator Everett Dirksen, who said, you know, a million here, a million there, and pretty soon we're talking about real money. But for health policy analysts, we usually say a billion here, a billion there. Now we're talking about real money. $35 billion, though, is relatively modest if you compare it with a lot of other major social programs. For example, the Social Security program is over $400 billion a year. Medicare is between $200 and $300 billion a year, and we spend over $100 billion a year to subsidize pension through the tax code. So if you look at this net cost, it's relatively modest in that perspective. I would finance it. There's two proposals for financing. One would be a small income tax surcharge. The other way you could finance it was a very modest payroll-based contribution, just as we pay for the health insurance, our Medicare, or our Social Security through the tax code. We could do this as well, and it would be less than 1% of our wages for this kind of comprehensive insurance protection against these risks.
And people who hear about this, some critics would probably roll their eyes and say, here we go again with another large government program. What makes you convinced this could work?
Well, there's two things I would say. One is that I actually argue that the program could be administered privately. So that.
But you also say it could be administered through the IRS, don't you?
That's right. So the program could contract with the private sector to provide a lot of the enrollment and the and the payment functions that are now that could, but it could also be handled by the IRS. And in fact, in a lot of ways, the IRS is sort of the most hated, but also one of the most efficient institutions for doing this. But for people who roll their eyes, what I would say is this. First of all, this is really a kind of last resort kind of protection, and really government is probably the only institution that could provide that kind of protection. You know, government can spread risks broadly across the population. It can ensure that everyone contributes a little bit toward the premiums to protect themselves against these risks. And most Americans are very supportive of a basic government role in providing such insurance, as in Social Security or Medicare or unemployment insurance. These are some of the most popular government programs that exist. And finally, this is, you know, it's really a program that's only kicks in when people are really experiencing hugely dire events that are really no fault of their own. And so I think people would be very sympathetic to families like the Dorsets and understand that giving people a little bit of help at these difficult times is really about not about sort of handouts to people who aren't like them, but it's really about protecting people who are like us and who have gone through events that we could go through at some point.
And looking at the big picture, stepping away from the Dorset family,
yeah.
How much would a program like this remedy the problem that we hear about day after day after day, and that is how to control healthcare spending, but more primarily how to save people from these dire bills that they get?
Yeah, this proposal is really not aiming at dealing with the broader healthcare problem. So no, but it, part of my argument is that a proposal like this could be a way of making a first step towards dealing with a lot of problems that cause economic insecurity for families. And by putting on the books a little bit of these costs, it really would sensitize political leaders to the real risks that are out there, because suddenly they would recognize the extent to which there are people who are having drops in income that are greater than 20 or 30 or 40%. So I think that it could have that important role. The other thing I would say is that it isn't a proposal to deal with the broader problems in American health insurance. And I have a proposal that is in the book and also that I'm developing more fully for the Economic Policy Institute, and will be released in early January of 2007. And that proposal would essentially allow employers to purchase coverage for their workers through a new public insurance pool called Healthy America. And it would, according to the estimates, would cover essentially all Americans through either this new public insurance pool or through private employment-based coverage for a relatively modest cost, about $140 a person in new national health spending.
We'll have you back then when it comes out.
Okay, great. I'll look forward to it.
Jacob Packer, the author of The Great Risk Shift. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.